the presence of those who are here tonight, and do appreciate the prayer that we were led in by the good brother. It's very apparent to everyone here that there are a lot of needs in this local congregation, and we need to be attentive to those needs. And toward that end, I think what I'd like to do here tonight is speak for a few moments on investing in the lives of others. Now, to be completely honest, this is a sermon that I have never once done in a gospel meeting before. And so that might sound a little alarming. Usually you think that the preacher is going to try to bring his, quote, best work. And I hope that certainly it's in that category there. But given the nature of the situation here, I think it'd be appropriate to look at this topic and theme. And I'd like to do it against the backdrop of Luke chapter 16. And a parable here that is considered rather a challenging parable. Now, when I say challenging, I'm talking about here now in the sense of raising perhaps some moral questions. We're looking here at the parable of the unjust steward. And I know that all of us here have read through it a number of times. And maybe you're among those that would say that it's still somewhat difficult to figure out the essence of this. So why is this here? What am I really supposed to get from this parable? Now, I've here called it a parable, but you'll observe that it's nowhere stated to be a parable. But to be sure, it's an illustration that Jesus is using here to teach about a fundamental principle, about how we as God's people need to be attentive to needs and treat each and every one that you meet as special and dear. Be good to others, because you never know when you're going to need a good deed returned back to you. So let's go ahead and read through this then, and then we'll make some commentary inch by inch through this narrative. In Luke chapter 16, here in verse 1, he also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else you be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Now, through a first glance of this and an initial read, it can come across as somewhat perplexing and confusing. And we think here we have some statements that are strung together, and we think perhaps they seem a little disconnected or disjointed. Why do we have what's written right here in the manner in which it's written? And maybe even more to the point, am I supposed to take from this that in some way, in some shape, form, or fashion, it is actually justifiable to to have dishonest dealings and crooked transactions? And the answer there is an emphatic no. The master is not commending the steward because of his dishonesty, but rather he is commending him, which is to say complimenting him, because of the fact that he had been dealing shrewdly, with great forethought and cleverness. Now, as you look through this here, here you have this man who is going to be let go. He's going to lose his job. It's always frustrating to lose a job, but when you look here at the manner in which he loses his job, you can sense the tension increasing all the more. Because he is going to be fired. What a dreaded word to hear. You're fired. And you see, there was some mismanagement that plays into this. Now, whether that means that he himself had bad bookkeeping, or if he himself had some grave oversights, we don't quite know for sure. But he was charged with wasting the master's goods. And in point of fact, others reported this about him. Now, some might say, well, did they rat him out? Well, they're concerned there about their setup. They're concerned there about their own livelihood. So they tell on this man here to the master, and the master says, look, I've heard all I want to hear. In a nutshell, you clear your desk, you're gone, you get out. I don't want to have you here any longer. You're fired. Now, I can't tell you all that was there with the emotions of this man upon hearing this. But I get the sense that perhaps, at least at the start, he goes through a cycle of panic mode, doesn't he? I mean, now the wheels are turning. What am I really going to do here? I mean, I had the cash cow. I had a great job here, and all of a sudden it's going to be yanked and pulled from me. So what will I do? And you can see how he's analyzing different scenarios here. He's saying within himself, look, now, how am I going to handle this? I cannot dig. Is this to say that he was handicapped? We're not told. It could be that pride is entering into the picture now, and he's saying, look, this is just beneath me. I don't really want to roll up the sleeves now and grab a shovel. That's not the type of labor that I was ever trained for. He says, I'm ashamed to beg. And you can think now here about the status that he had occupied, and sometimes a steward could be a very powerful person. And so he's thinking now, look, I don't want to be that person out there passing the hat. I don't want to be made the laughingstock of the town now. I just cannot go this direction. And so you can see here how, in a moment of great desperation, he has a bit of a brainwave, doesn't he? The light bulb comes on. He's got a plan. He's got a strategy. Now, we have to understand from this that the Lord Himself, in sharing this message here, is in no way commending dishonesty. But rather what He is doing here is pointing out that there is a contrast, there is a grave contrast between the sons of this world and the sons of light, namely the disciples. He's pointing out here that when you just look at people in the world, worldly minded men, when they recognize that they are in a bit of a bind, that they are in a pinch, they're stuck there between that proverbial rock and a hard place, they know how to look after their own interests. I mean, they start thinking outside the box. They're going to just knock down whatever wall is in their way. They're going to try to climb over that wall. They're going to get creative. They're going to manipulate. They're going to try to control. They'll scratch and claw to try and stay ahead and stay in the game, so to speak. And what the Lord is pointing out is that with His own people, sometimes we fail right here in properly thinking ahead. We fail to be forward thinking. You see, look at this here now. There were tenants here. Tenants on this land. And they had to, quote, pay rent. They had to pay up there to the landlord. And when you look here at this particular time now, you would have estimated this to be about annually that it would be done. You see, because payment could be made when harvest came in, correct? And so you're looking at this here now from like a yearly perspective. As this steward here has this eureka moment, he calls in the various tenants here. Every one of his master's debtors to him. And he's asking one question alone. How much is it that you owe? All right. So you have the first here to speak up to say, I owe 100 measures of oil. Now, potentially you're looking at someone who had olive trees there on his land. And so that translates into about 900 gallons. All right. So he says, well, I got some good news for you today. You don't owe that today. Not today you don't. You sit down quickly, you take that bill, and you write 50 as opposed to 100. So that's about 450 gallons. Would that not brighten his day? Would that not put a smile on his face? You better believe it, it would. And he says, oh, he's not wasting any time. You over there, you come over here now. How much do you owe? What's the answer? Well, I owe 100 measures of wheat. Not today, you don't. You take your bill and write 80. 20% discount right there. All right, that was 1,200 bushels. When you look at the 100 there, you cut it down to 80, it's about 960 that's left. So take out the missus, buy her something nice, take out the kids, treat them. You get the picture of what's going on here? I mean, this joker, he's just cutting deals left and right with people, isn't he? And what you have to get about this here is that in ancient times, and yes, there are modern parallels, but in this ancient culture, if somebody did for you, you were in turn expected to do back for them in time to come. And usually, in that situation, the person that you bailed out, the person that you helped in some shape or form, was more than eager to return the favor. Now, there's a couple other notes we need to make here about this. What you have to realize here about this steward is that he had authority to act on behalf of the master, at least while he still occupied that position. Now, the writing was on the wall. His contract was going to be terminated. But while he still had that position there, he's making hay while the sun shines, isn't he? And I can just picture now a big grin here coming on his face as he's trying to do all of this here. Let's work fast. He says, write it as fast as you can. Sit down quickly to do this. Quickly is the word, right? Haste is of the hour. So he can act here with the authority. It would be as though the master himself had said, all right, you can deduct 50% or you can deduct 20%. Okay? But not only that, here was a man who actually knew the law too. You see, there's a reason he doesn't say, all right, I want you to take your bill and write 5. Or take your bill and write 0. Debt paid, debt canceled. He knew what he could get away with legally. You see? So that when all is now out in the open, the master is left with no recourse but to say, ah, he got me. That stinker got me. I can't press charges. There's nothing I can do any longer here. That man over there, that's Slick Willie. So he's complimenting him for thinking ahead that way. Now then, the Lord lays this groundwork here. And he wants to talk ultimately to the sons of light. Who would be the sons of light? Christians, disciples, right? So here he brings us down to where we live, doesn't he? And what does he have to say? It's there in verse 9. After sharing this whole story here, he says, and I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, and most translations actually say that when it fails, but the two will be related together, I'll explain that, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. Now stop right there. Did we hear that right? Make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon. Does that sound a little problematic? At least when you first hear that and let that there roll around in your head. You see, because in some ways we are conditioned to be thinking there about money as Christians. We think sometimes about money as something that can be potentially dirty. And certainly there are dangers connected with great riches. But let's not forget that the record tells us that it is the love of money, not money itself, but the love of money, that is the root of all kinds of evil. What exactly is money? Money is basically a tool, right? Money can be used as a weapon. We've seen that happen time and again. Money can be used as enticement or a trap. But when all is said and done, money is basically a tool, and tools can be used responsibly. So you see here what Jesus is getting at. Now, I've thought a lot about this. This is a text I've been meditating a lot on, and I'm of the mind personally that where you see that phrase, unrighteous mammon, you could pretty well supply the phrase, all your physical blessings. All your physical blessings. In other words, your life, your health, your time, your talents, all of that there. We are to invest all of that there into the lives of others. Now when he says here, you make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, he's not saying that you need to purchase your friends or buy them that way. If you're going to have to buy them like that, they're not true friends, right? But you see, the ultimate focus is not so much on money here as it is on people. As it is on relationships and connections. You see, our lives are connected in ways that we don't always pick up on. And you may not have known me from Adam, but here I am. And I, as I live life, increasingly, I do not see things as happening just by mere coincidence or chance. But God in providence has a way of bringing people our way that are in need in some way. Bringing situations about where we can contribute, where we can be helpful. That is key. So do not let those opportunities just slip by. We know about Abraham. Abraham was a great man of faith, wasn't he? We call him the father of the faithful. Here was a man who was tested greatly in life, right? We can enumerate several of those tests, but maybe one we don't always pick up on is found there in Genesis chapter 18. In Genesis chapter 18, the record tells you, Genesis 18 verse 1. Genesis 18 verse 1. Then the Lord appeared to him by the terebinth trees of Mamre as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. Now the Lord appeared to him, yes, but you read through this here and you get the distinct impression that at least at this stage, at least at this moment, he's not really privy to that or aware of that. All he knows is that he has three men who are standing right there. And when he saw them, he ran. He just jumps on this. He ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, my Lord. I think of that in like a distributive sense. He's referring to all of them there as a Lord, as it were. I mean, as powerful as Abraham was, having all this livestock, having all of these servants, he's referring to these men as Lord. My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I'll bring you a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that, you may pass by inasmuch as you have come to your servant. They said, do as you have said. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, quickly, make ready three measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. They're going to be having steak. You see how he is treating them as royalty? And as far as we know, Abraham had never, ever once laid eyes on these individuals before. Be careful to entertain strangers, for some have unwittingly entertained angels. Abraham was tested. You see, he didn't see this as just mere coincidence. But he lived his life in such a way as that daily, whoever God would bring his way, he was going to be as a servant to them. He was going to invest in their lives. How powerful that is. You know, you think there about that rich young ruler? We hear that story quite a bit, don't we? Maybe one part we miss to that would be a little like this. Here's this rich young ruler. Oh, he comes running there to Jesus. Good teacher, what good thing must I do to inherit eternal life? He's coming there to the right person. He comes there to the right source, yes? He knew that Jesus had the answer. And so he hears about all of these various laws. Well, I've done that for my youth. Oh yeah, I've got that off the checklist. I've been like that there. I'm all right here. What did Jesus tell him? One thing you lack. Go, sell what you have. Give to the poor. And come follow me. And you'll have what? You'll have treasure in heaven. Now does he do it? He doesn't. That was a bridge too far. What? He knew that Jesus had the answer, but he did not fully trust the Lord, did he? Now, what we don't get from that is that all of us are supposed to go out and sell all that we have and become dependent on the government. That's not the idea there. Here was an offer that was made here to this young man. And he was tested. And he failed the test, didn't he? You see, he looked at money as being a servant to him. He had a misunderstanding. That's not why he had his money. That money was there to serve God's purposes. That money was there to serve others. And how short-sighted he was. Because as we say, you can't take it with you. And all of his wealth, all that abundance, scattered to the winds, it's but dust today. But his legacy lives on. We have to evaluate our lives, each one of us here. The question is not whether or not you had a life. You have a life. The question is, what are you doing with it? How are we contributing to the lives of others? Being a blessing in their lives. Yes. Impacting them for good. This is what Jesus is getting at in this illustration of Luke 16. So he says here, Luke 16, now in verse 10. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least or dishonest in what is least is dishonest also in much. What does all of that mean? How does that apply? Basically what Christ is getting at is this. You are who you are. Who you are is who you are. That's who you are. Whether you can be trusted or not. It doesn't mean you always have to be that way. But with the decisions and choices that you've made, with what you've been given, with what has been entrusted to you, that is defining now who you are as a person. Whether you're going to be generous or stingy and uptight with what God has placed there in your custody. You see, eventually all of this will fail, won't it? Your physical blessings, did you catch what I said? Your physical blessings will fail. I don't care how young and how robust and stout one might be. Eventually that is going to fail. You might have a wonderful job, but eventually, I got news for you, eventually that's going to fail. You have a nice house, you drive a nice car, in time those will break down. But the question is, what did you do with all of that when you had it? I'm fairly sure that even here, we probably have the major fields of work that are represented. School teachers and administrators, people that are there with, say, the health department. If one thinks that their job as a teacher is simply about teaching kids, with all due respect, I think that they've missed it. If someone thinks that their job, say, as a doctor, is merely here about prescribing medication and helping people to be cured, helping them to find a remedy, I believe that they've missed it. whole purpose behind our jobs is to be looking there at our sphere of influence, using what we have there, our presence right there, to influence people for Christ and His glory. You see? That's what this is all about, isn't it? Absolutely, it's what it's all about. Seeking to get to heaven in the after while. You see, because if we have missed heaven, then we have missed what this life is really all about. Bottom line. So look within. Do your soul searching. What has been your perspective? What's been your priorities? The people that you work with, do they know that you're a Christian? A member of Christ's church, the church of Christ. Do they know that about you? Or are we just hiding in the shadows? You see, because we're talking here now about your friends. They're not necessarily my friends. I don't know them. But they're in your circle of influence, aren't they? So you see how we're tested this way? Absolutely, we're tested this way. And so you see, when all is said and done here about this illustration, here's maybe the bombshell behind it. This is basically a lesson on going to heaven and doing whatever it takes to get there. So Jesus says this, verse 11. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, God gave it to you, right? He gave you all your physical blessings. If you've misunderstood why they have been present in your world, okay, who will commit to your trust the true riches? What are the true riches? These are the greater riches, the spiritual blessings. And he moves forward here. If you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? Now, it's true that this principle applies to anyone who would lend you something. Okay. But I read between the lines here on some of this. If we're looking here at the true riches, the greatest of riches, those greatest riches come from who? From God Himself. He alone can give them. And so when you see here this other man of verse 12, if you've not been faithful in what is another man's, ultimately what Jesus is driving at is if you have not been faithful in what ultimately belongs to God, then who will give you what is your own? You can't take it with you here. It's not really your own here. But what did Jesus say about this in John chapter 14? In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. That will be your own. Because that is lasting. That is eternal. But Christ is saying that if you miss the point with what you have here right now, I can't give you heaven. It won't happen. You see how powerful that is? Invest in the lives of others. Because this is the work that God would have us to do. Verse 13 then really hits home. It comes to the surface for light, doesn't it? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. If you're truly going to serve God, then that means you're going to take whatever God has given you and render it back to Him. Render it back there for His purposes. But if not, then you're using it just for yourselves. And in using it there just for yourselves, you're making it all about stuff. And stockpiling all that stuff. And you're serving the God of stuff. And it won't help you come eternity. In fact, that will prove to be our condemnation. So we see here, verse 14. Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of what? Lovers of money. They loved their stuff. They loved their power, their prestige, their status. They also heard all these things and they derided Him. They mocked Him. Well, Jesus calls them all out, doesn't he? He said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts." See, it's all about the heart here, isn't it? "For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." Oh, you Pharisees, you think you've got this all figured out. You think you've really got it together. You've got it all backwards. You don't understand the God that you claim to serve. We need to start looking at each moment that we have in such a way that we're asking ourselves, what is the best possible use? What is the best possible use of our time? You see, because if it's all just about going home and retreating and hiding away from the rest of the world, turning on the television there, watching some Netflix, potentially we're wasting God's golden moments. Could there be others that we could be calling up, checking up on them, seeing how they're doing? Learned about a lady out in Sharpsburg, Georgia, just south of Atlanta. 5 years, she was working there as a school administrator. And as she'd go to the break room, she'd be talking there to a man. And after 5 years, that man obeyed the gospel of Christ. You see, she got it. She got what this was all about. Even with her job. You see, because that job was not truly her own, but that job belonged to God. And so she wanted to utilize all of that there for God's ultimate glory. Let's do soul searching there. Let's see how we can be great servants of God. Make friends of God's children. Help those who are weak, forgetting in nothing His blessings to seek. And you know what? When we look at it here from this angle, I have to freely confess that it hurts. It hurts. It does. Because I think in some ways I used to lie to myself. I'm a gospel preacher. I'm going to tell you about this, all right? I used to lie to myself thinking that, well, if only I had this or if only I had that, well, I could just be a much better servant for God. If we're reasoning that way, we're not yet quite the servant for God that we need to be. God has given us something. Make use of that. Don't complain about that. Don't be thinking, well, if I just had a bigger house, then I could be hospitable. You got a place that you live in? Is it just impossible for people to just maybe sit on the floor, move some furniture here and there, clear some tables, get people over there in your house because God gave you that house and He gave it to you for a reason? See how this works? Soul searching here. How are we using what God has given to us? Let's be thankful to Him. And looking at it here from this angle then, it does hurt. Because I do believe in a way, all of us have been there as that steward. Initially making poor choices, unwise decisions, and what did it cost us? It cost us the stewardship. What a heavy price to pay. But God wants to know now, what are we going to do with the time that is left? What are you going to do now? Make haste. Act with eagerness. Use what you have left for God's glory. You see, because those are physical blessings. And they're going to fail. You could be the CEO of a company. I got news for you. It's going to fail eventually. And if one thinks that they're put there for their own ego trip or to have this nice mansion over there and just have a great reputation, they're wrong about that. It's not ever about us. It's about God. How are we using God's golden moments? Shall we reap glory or shall we reap tears? That's a question that comes to you and to me. We have to take all of this very, very seriously. But the good news is that God wants us there in heaven with Him. And that's why He's pulling for us, pulling on our behalf, that we could learn the important lessons of life here and now so as to inherit heaven in the after while. If you love God, you're going to serve God. you're going to have that right perspective. And it'll be something that you look forward to doing as you invest in the lives of others and point the way to the cross. If one is here not a Christian, become one today. The plan of salvation is very simple and straightforward. And he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. If you had some shortcomings here, perhaps in an area that we've talked about tonight, then do not make excuses for that. Swallow pride. Humble yourselves under the hand of God and He will lift you up. He'll exalt you in due time. We can pray with you and for you. That's an opportunity right now to take advantage of. If we can be of service at this time, come to the front while we stand now and sing.